The very sight of that window, by day or by night, made her feel nauseous with fear. She reached for the curtains, glancing out of the window as she did so, and froze, her eyes widening with shock, her hands tightening their grip on the curtains. It was back. There, just beyond the pool of light on illuminated patch of lawn in front of the house, there the inky blackness of the drive beyond, a figure was moving around, a tall, silver, luminous, unmistakable figure. In profile this time. Glowing eerily in the dark, floating slowly up the drive and past the house. Just gliding ghost-like through the night, arms fixed rigidly at its sides, its helmeted head pointing straight ahead. Dear God, it was the same creature, returned. But this time she was alone. Had it seen her? Why had it come back? What did it want? She wanted to move, but couldn't. She just stood, clutching the curtains, framed in the window, mesmerized by the sight. The figure moved slowly onwards up the drive until darkness began to envelop it. Then, as she watched, it vanished. Just as before. Just like a light being switched off. She bowed her head, dropped her trembling hands to her sides, took a step backwards and slumped into Billy's armchair. Heaven knows, she'd tried to rationalize all this over the past couple of days, tried to confront the phenomena, tried to control her fear of the unknown, but how could she? How could anyone? They were real, these creatures, and they were interested in her and her family for some unearthly reason. She sat in silence for what seemed like an eternity, not daring to move. Midnight. The chimes on the mantelpiece coincided with the sound of Billy's car crunching to a halt outside. Thank God. She rushed over and flung herself into his arms the moment he got in the door. He held her tight and led her back into the front room and settled her into the sofa. The figure, that creature, it was back, floating past the window, she sobbed. I guessed as much, sighed Billy, squeezing her tighter. You must have been terrified all alone. But no matter. I'm here and it's gone now. I'll fix you some cocoa and then we'll get you straight to bed, all right? She nodded, taking a deep breath and managing a smile. I've got to stay with that heifer tonight, he went on, squeezing her hand. You remember, the one that's ailing? I don't like to leave you alone, but what can I do? Do you'll be all right now? She agreed reluctantly. I'll be all right, love. Lan will be in with me tonight any case. Billy held her tight again for a moment and then went into the kitchen to make the nightcap. She would be all right, he thought to himself. He'd never seen her look so exhausted. Sleep would claim her immediately she went to bed. 9:30. Pauline looked at the alarm clock and rubbed her eyes in disbelief. It couldn't be. Heavens, she was late. She'd never been this late. She was always up before Billy and Clinton to get them breakfast and then see them off to work. And then there were the kids. They should already have had their breakfast before going to school. What were they all playing at? Letting her sleep this late. She smiled to herself. Billy will have had something to do with this. He'll most likely have told them all to look after themselves and leave her to sleep. She started to get up, then fell back. Good God, what was wrong with her arm? She could barely move it, and what could have caused all that swelling and irritation? It was damn near paralyzed. Had she been sleeping on it? No, that wouldn't account for all the inflammation. Heavens, it hurt. She struggled out of bed and maneuvered a dressing around her shoulders. It would probably loosen up a little in a minute, she reasoned, as she gave it a gentle but painful squeeze. She'd have a spot of breakfast with the kids just before they left for school. That would make her feel better. Funny thing, she should feel grand after such an uncharacteristically long sleep, but not only did her arm feel terrible, but her eyes were stinging terribly as well. As if she hadn't slept for a week. And they looked like it, too, she thought as she studied them in the bathroom mirror. My word, they were so swollen and puffy she could hardly see out of them. Looked as if she'd spent too long under a sunray lamp and got ultraviolet sickness or something. Oh no. The creature last night. She'd watched it closely for more than 5 minutes. And the brightness of the glow it gave off. Please, no. Don't let it be that. She clenched the edge of the basin tightly, to steady herself. What was it Billy had said about how there was no reason to be frightened because they hadn't actually hurt anyone yet? She breathed in deeply. She mustn't panic or cry. She had to make sure the kids had got their breakfast all right and were ready to go to school, and she mustn't frighten them. There was no good reason that they should be told that another creature had been seen near the house the night before. She made her way downstairs. Kyra Lan and Joanne were already tucking into their cornflakes. Somebody had put the kettle on for a fresh pot. She flinched as the morning sunshine dazzled her aching eyes. "Morning, lazy bones," cracked Kieran. The twins were uncommonly quiet. "What the matter, soap got into your eyes?" quizzed Kieran, always the joker. Pauline smiled winsomely. "That's right, Kay." She glanced at the twins. They drove her mad when they were too rowdy, which was most of the time, but it worried her when they were this quiet. That generally meant something was wrong. She noticed Joanne vigorously scratching her foot. "What the matter, love?" Joan rolled down a white sock and partly pulled it off, to reveal the side of her foot. "Got trash, Mum, just like Lan's got on her leg. Started when we were kicking around in the grass, looking for that red box yesterday." Pauline felt tears stinging the inflammation around her eyes. "Not the children, too. Probably just a grass rash, love." "Don't think so, Mum. We've had that before, but it is nothing like this. This burns something terrible. It will, love. It will." Pauline hoped the choked tone of her voice didn't give away her true feelings. "Get on and eat your breakfast or you'll be late school." She turned her back to them, gripping the sideboard, steadying herself again. It was happening to them all now, not just happening around them. And what next? Must keep calm. Must think. "Mum."
"Yes, Lan?
Do you think it would be all right if I went to stay with Tina and Grandma for a bit?"
"Of course, love, but why?"
"No reason," she shrugged. "I'd just like to."
"That's all you did promise me I could, ages ago."
"Yes, so I did." "Of course you can, love. When?"
"Tonight?"
The voice had an expectant, pleading tone to it. She in no mood to argue. The way her mind was working the moment, she felt it would probably be no bad thing if the child wasn't around. It was one less to be harmed. "All right, love, I'll have your dad run you over there this evening after school."
"Thanks, Mum."
She watched them go, and gratefully. She had to take easy today, she felt terrible. And she had to have time to think. By the evening, she felt no better. Her eyes were still red, puffy and horribly swollen, and her arm looked the same and was still virtually immobile. Even the kids looked worried when they got home from school at 4:30 for their tea, and when Billy and Clinton arrived shortly afterwards, they insisted she put her feet up for the rest of the day and that they would look after dinner and the putting of the children to bed. She had to admit she was glad of the offer.
"Do you want a doctor, love?"
"I think you should, you look absolutely dreadful." Billy knelt down beside the sofa, next to her. "What do you reckon the matter is?"
"Probably just got some soap, or hair lacquer or something in my eyes," she lied to him, dismissing the subject and patting him on the head.
"Don't you worry yourself, love. I've taken some eye drops. It'll pass." Billy looked deep into her inflamed eyes, normally so big, bright and beautiful, and nodded. She obviously hadn't considered that the trouble might have been caused by looking at that figure the previous night. That was a blessing, he thought to himself. She'd be frightened witless otherwise. "And what about the arm?" Pauline shrugged. As far as that was concerned, she really had no idea what was the matter with it.
"Haven't a clue, love. Must have turned badly in the night and pulled a muscle or something. Search me.
Don't you worry yourself, though. I told you before, Mum's expecting Lan down at Milford Haven soon, so you'd better get moving." Billy stood up and shrugged. "Drat that child. Pauline should never have agreed to letting her go off like that, at the drop of a hat, on a mere whim, for no good reason." All right, so she always did have a marvelous time with her granny and with Tina, but leaving like this, so suddenly, was going to upset the whole family routine. Still, Pauline had agreed, so there was no more to be said.
Pauline waved to them both as they left up the drive and then to Clinton and Gian as they left the house and walked down the drive and the opposite direction, to go shooting in the fields. She'd persuaded them to take Joanne along with them, so that she could get a couple of hours' sleep on the sofa before getting the dinner at 7 o'clock. She was amazed that they'd agreed, or that Joanne should have wanted to go. Neither of the twins wanted to venture far from the house since they'd been frightened by the figure and the strange craft in the field. She was relieved when they left, and she settled back onto the sofa for much-needed rest. Maybe she'd feel better when she woke. "What's that?" Pauline started out of her sleep, as a hand touched her gently on the arm. It was Gian. "Telephone, Mum," he explained. "Sorry to have to wake you." "That's all right, love." She looked at her watch. "Heavens above, it's 9 o'clock. Why didn't somebody wake me? I've got the dinner to make." "Oh, no." She got to her feet. Gian was beaming proudly. "Dad said to leave you be. We got the dinner between and we're all going to have an early night. Dad said he'd even help us all do the washing up." She smiled. She had a good family. "Pauline?" Billy looked around the door, from the hall. He was scowling and holding the telephone in an outstretched hand. "Come on, love, it's your mum, she's holding on." She took the phone. "Hello, Mum. How are you? All right? And Dad? Lan behaving herself, is she?" There was a long pause. "Mum? Sorry." "Yes, Pauline, I'm here. Look, love, that's why phoning." "Yes, Lan's here, but she's not all right. She didn't just come visiting because she wanted to, but she was frightened of staying up at the farm." "Qh no, why?" Pauline shook her head. "It can't be what's been happening here. I just can't believe that. She always been less frightened than the rest of the kids and in any case, she's said nothing to me." She held the telephone tighter. For so long, she and Billy had tried to shield the children from the worst of what was happening for fear of just something like this. "No, Pauline, it's not just that," insisted her mother, "there's more." A pause. "Listen, love, I didn't know whether to tell you this, or not. Normally I'd have put it all down to a child's prank, or over-imagination, or a bad dream, but Lan was so frightened when it came to going to bed tonight, that when I asked her what the matter was, she blurted out what I'm about to tell you. As I said, normally I'd have ignored it, but bearing in mind what's been happening up there for the last few months and especially the state your arm sign, I just had to tell you. According to her, she woke up last night in your bed, not long after you'd both turned in for the night, and she'd heard a noise in the room like rustling paper. When she turned over, she saw what she described as a silvery hand, just a hand, drifting through the door opposite and over to your side of the room, where it touched you on the arm. Then it drifted slowly out of the room again. She said she was so frightened that she didn't dare move at the time, but when it had gone, she tried to rouse you but you were obviously so exhausted, she couldn't get you to wake up. Or that's what she thought at the time. Pauline's mother waited for a reaction. There was none. "Pauline, are you still there?" She heard only sobbing. Then the phone went dead. Billy came back into the room. "All right, love? Feeling better?" Then he noticed the state she was in. "My God, love. What did she say to you? What's the matter?" He took her by the hand. She was trembling furiously. She looked up at him, her eyes red from the combination of the crying and the ultraviolet irritation. "We've got to leave here before it's too late, Billy. We've got to leave this place." Then she fell into his arms. 5, June 7th, 1977. Great. They all looked absolutely great. Billy smiled contentedly at the sight of his children resplendent in their red, white and blue fancy dress, ready for the Jubilee Day party at the next farm. Almost every child in the neighborhood would be there, he thought to himself, but they'd have to be a bit special to match his brood. He looked over to Pauline, busy putting the finishing touches to Joanne's ribbons. When she had finished, she kissed her youngest on the forehead, then patted her bottom to indicate that it was time for her, Lan and Gian to be on their way. Never had a day of celebration been more welcome, he mused. Such distractions couldn't be more timely. The last few weeks had been murder. Nothing strange or frightening had happened directly to them, thank the Lord, but the after effects of what had already happened were bad enough. It had been a week before the twins' rashes had subsided and Pauline's eyes had recovered, and for another 2 weeks before her arm was back to normal. Then, of course, there was the effect on the family of it had happened to Blackie. They had all been terribly saddened when he had had to have the dog put to sleep, although they understood perfectly why he had to do it. There was just no way Blackie could have stayed with the family or gone to another home. The effect of seeing the figure at the window that night had quite simply driven him insane. His behavior had grown progressively more erratic and unpredictable as the weeks went by. More and more he'd spend time running dementedly around in circles, snarling and with his hackles raised, he refused to leave the house and when forcibly put out at night, he howled continuously at the same empty spot outside the window where the figure had stood. They all loved him, but he was getting worse and was now at peace. For the rest of the family, life was now a little more settled, not that it seemed to be for the rest of the neighborhood. Strange reports were still coming out in the local papers of inexplicable sightings of strange figures and mysterious flying objects, but though he and Pauline had taken careful note of what was going on, they had tried to keep it from the children, not wanting to frighten them further. Rosa, of course, had telephoned again, to say that since she'd seen the strange craft and figures outside the hotel, she'd twice seen an orange globe of light pulsating outside her bedroom window, swinging like a pendulum, for long periods of time. What she'd described, and the mesmeric effect it had on her, had corresponded exactly with the light that Pauline had first seen in the one that had followed the car that night. Rosa was now so frightened that she said she was going to write to her Member of Parliament for help, demanding that he find out if all the mysterious things they had seen were something to do with the Broadie RAF base adjoining the hotel. If it was, she didn't want to know anything else. If it wasn't, and they didn't know what it was either, she was going to demand they find out and give her assurances that they were safe. If they couldn't make that assurance, she said, they were going to leave the hotel. Billy smiled to himself. Good old Rosa. That was the Spanish blood in her, the fiery Latin temperament showing. Maybe he and Pauline should have shown similar mettle in demanding that the authorities do something to help them. Strange, he thought to himself, how his reaction to the latest UFO reports in the area had altered from his original tongue-in-cheek skepticism to complete acceptance. Well, perhaps it wasn't so strange. After all, how could he disbelieve anything, after what he and his family had been NG through? How could any of the people who had read similar, albeit individual, experiences retain their cynicism? It would be impossible. What they were seeing was so stark, so vivid, so obviously real. One Milford Haven businessman, together with his wife, one of his neighbors, spent 5 minutes looking through binoculars at what he described to the local paper being a silvery craft the size of an airliner with a dome the top flying in a zigzag formation over his house, laughed about UFOs for ages. But the sight of the blasted thing has changed my views completely, he'd gone to say. I'm not some nutcase or crank, I just believe I see with my own eyes. I've traveled the world and many things in my life, but I'd never seen anything like that before. Billy remembered how he'd laughed when he first read that. It was a laugh not of ridicule, but of sympathy, mixed with despair. He knew, so well, how desperate the man feel, trying to get people who hadn't seen such things with their own eyes to accept that he actually had. Never was the old adage seeing is believing so appropriate. Other reports sprang to mind. There was that old age pensioner in Milford Haven, a retired council worker who was well known for his dour, down-to-earth manner, who had been so stunned by what he had seen. He had only told the local paper his story on the understanding that he remained anonymous, for fear of being ridiculed. He knew what he had seen and was quite adamant about it, but also knew others would probably never believe him. Billy sympathized. His story was as fantastic as the one he and Pauline had to tell. He had apparently been woken up at 5 o'clock in the morning recently by a pulsating light was shining into his bed sitting room in Milford Haven. When he'd looked outside, he'd seen a giant, silver, egg-shaped craft swinging like a pendulum across a distance about 30 or 40 feet, at rooftop level. 30 feet from the craft, he claimed, a spaceman was suspended in the air like a free-fall parachutist. He was, he said, absolutely clear about what was happening because he watched them both hanging in the air above him for a full 40 minutes before they drifted away out of sight. His reaction had been the same as Billy's, the Milford Haven businessman's and that of countless others in the area. He didn't believe in UFOs before. I thought it was all a lot of bloody nonsense. I thought people were making up stories or imagining things. Not now, though. I know exactly what I saw, and that's that. He might have done, thought Billy, but he was right to retain his anonymity. People rarely believed in what they hadn't seen for themselves. That was the trouble. That's what worried him when it came to any likelihood of getting help in an emergency. Who would believe him? What had to happen before even the cynics would take seriously what was happening in the area? Goodness only knows. When even an RAF officer on leave reported seeing a UFO in starkest detail, and people wouldn't take the phenomena seriously. The local paper had reported how he had described seeing a fairly large, circular object, covered in lights and moving as though it was manned, flying very low over the River Cleddau, at a speed of approximately 1,000 miles an hour. He sighed to himself. Somebody had better start doing something to find out what was happening, before something serious occurred. It wasn't so much the mysterious sightings in the sky that troubled him, and many people it was the regular reports of strange, spaceman-like figures in their midst, and seemingly trying to make some sort of contact. He watched Pauline putting the finishing touches to the children's clothes. Lord knows. He thought to himself, my family might be at risk. He and Pauline and the kids, not to mention their nephew and Rosa, had all described encounters with these alien figures, and who knew what it was leading up to. Only a few days ago, one of Guillen's friends, Stephen Taylor, a young man regarded by everyone who knew him as being a nice, honest, well-behaved, had reported yet another encounter. Billy remembered the newspaper report vividly. Stephen had been back to his home from his girlfriend's house when seen a dog racing out of the darkness towards him and past him, as though something was chasing him. A little further on, he'd noticed that the lights of a farmhouse that he normally saw on his right-hand side were blotted out by something. Looking closer, he'd been able to make out a giant silver, dome-shaped object that filled up half the field and gave off a dim light from its underside. I'd leaned on the gate and was studying it, when I heard a sound like someone treading on dried leaves, he'd related later, and I looked to my right, in the direction of the noise. Standing very close to me was a figure that like a very skinny human being about 6 foot tall and had high cheekbones like an old man's and large, glassy eyes, a bit like a fish's, round and glazy. Over his mouth he had a box-like contraption and a tube leading from this over his shoulder. He was wearing something very strange, a sort of one-piece suit of something that was transparent, but somehow not transparent, with a sort of zip-like attachment down the middle of it. I didn't notice more, because I took a panicky swing at it and started run. I ran all the way home and never looked around till I got there. When I got home, something very odd happened. I went to pet our Pomeranian dog, but it snarled me and I couldn't get near it. Its hackles were up and it frightened and terrified of me. We had to put it outside the night until, by the following morning, it was back to being its normal, affectionate self. Billy shuddered as he recalled the story. He didn't know the lad personally, and the lad knew nothing of the experiences the family had had recently, because he had told nobody, but so many little details were familiar to him. That sound he described as being like somebody treading dried leaves. Hadn't Lan described a sound like rustling paper when that silver hand had come into the room that night and touched Pauline? And the description of what this figure was wearing. All right, there was no helmet this time, but he himself remembered, from first-hand experience, that zippered, one-piece suit that looked transparent but somehow not transparent. And that dog that came racing out of the darkness and the boy's own dog being frightened of him and threatening him? Memories of Blackie came flooding back. Pauline's voice suddenly startled him out of his daydream. Billy? Wake up, love. Everybody's ready. I'm just going to run them down to the party. You'll be back in the cowsheds by the time I get back, won't you? He nodded. And Clinton, she said, turning to her eldest, you'll be staying here, right? Billy smiled. This was more like the Pauline he knew, brisk, efficient and effervescent. She was still far from her normal self, still obsessional about drawing the curtains even before the light went and still uncharacteristically frightened in the dark, but was far more composed and had seemed to have come to terms with the situation far better than she had done before. He just hoped it would last, and would be allowed to. Please, he thought to himself, let none of them see any more mysterious spacecraft or alien figures. He watched them leave, then made his own way back to work in the cowsheds, leaving Clinton to enjoy some of his day off the way he liked it most, quietly on his own. Pauline pulled the car up outside the farm. She'd only stayed a couple of hours at the party and had then acted like any discreet parent, and left the children to their own devices. It was a good job Clinton was in. She'd forgotten her keys again. She rang the doorbell and waited. Nothing. Strange, she thought. Clinton was normally so quick to answer the door. Rang again. Nothing. Then a voice. A whisper. Clinton? What are you playing at? Let me in this instant. She heard the sound of the newly fitted safety chain slid back. The door opened and Clinton was standing there, white as a sheet and looking badly shaken. Oh, Mum, it is you. Course it's only me. Who else were you expecting? I thought perhaps it was those two men, come back again. What two men? You know darned well which two men. Clint, what are you going on about? She was getting cross now. He looked at her, a bewildered, troubled expression on face. You know, the ones in the car that passed you, as you drove in. He insisted. It was Pauline's turn to look bewildered. Listen, Clint, she told him, I saw nobody, passed nobody in the drive as I arrived. She couldn't mistake a look of near panic on his normally passive face. But Mum, you must have passed them. Just a couple seconds, quite literally, before you pulled up outside, had left, up the drive. There's only room for one car get up and down that drive and there's no other way or out of the farm, so you must have passed them, mustn't you? Now Pauline felt a bit panicky herself. Who are they, Clint? Two men. Or rather they weren't really men. Not human I don't think, who just came to the house. I saw them arrive in this enormous silver car. Well, I say car, it was like no car I ever saw before. Anyway, one of these men stayed in the car and then I saw the other coming up to the house. I could see them both quite clearly and both of the men were identical, both with dark colored suits on, both very tall and thin, both with dark, slicked back hair and abnormally large foreheads. The one who walked up to the house glided rather than walked, hardly moving his arms. I tell you, Ma, it was all wrong. It looked right enough on the surface, but when you looked closely at it all, the car and the men there was something wrong, something unreal about it. It was like an illusion. It really frightened me, that's all I know. I didn't wait to find out, I can tell you, I locked the front door immediately, then the back door, and went and hid upstairs. He shook his head, eyes downcast, as if ashamed of his fear. Pauline reached out and squeezed his hand reassuringly. She hoped that he wouldn't notice that she, too, was trembling. If Clint had been frightened, she knew it must have been with good reason. He was the eldest of her children and proud of the fact. He'd witnessed little or none of the phenomena that the rest of the family had and had therefore shown no fear at all, up until now. He was used to opening the door to all sorts of people at the farm, friends, relations, strangers, and had been for years. If these people had frightened him, it must have been with good reason. He tried the front door, then the back door, but I wasn't about to open them, he was saying, his gaze still over-averted from hers, so then he went next door to speak to Carol. Pauline went cold. Carol? Carol spoke to him? My God. Is she all right? She panicked for an instant. Carol, a nurse who rented a little cottage adjacent to the farmhouse, was away such a lot that she'd been spared everything that had been happening to them, and she and Billy and the family had been sure to keep it all from her, not wanting to frighten her. All she knew about what had happened at the farm was what she had read in the local papers, and after the incident of the light chasing the car and the figure at the window, they hadn't spoken to the papers, so she knew nothing. But now, this.